Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. We're going to go back to the calls here, go back to these cuts from Morning Joe. I also have an amazing back and forth on CNN between Jonah Goldberg and a reporter from the New York Times. I don't think a lot of these, whether it's, you know, conservatives that get on CNN, not really conservative, but that's neither here nor there. But when people get on these shows and they're confronted with some of this propaganda from these journalists, I think they're a little taken aback. Like, you actually believe this stuff? And to that point, I saw a tweet from AOC today that she's saying, why is everyone focusing on the college campuses and these protests and not the report about the IDF? And she goes into this whole thing, and somebody beneath it wrote, because that's been debunked. You're repeating Hamas propaganda, which, Jared, according to my sound cuts, Nancy Pelosi says is fine. We can trust Hamas when it comes to the numbers.
Yeah, we can accept the numbers.
Well, let me hear that. This is Nancy Pelosi, former Speaker of the House, master legislator. Cut 10.
The overwhelming, we don't know how many people have died. We have the Hamas report. Let's accept that it's tens of thousands. 10 would be too many, but tens of
35,
thousands.
35,000 seems to be the number at the moment.
I know that's what it said, yeah. And let's accept that it's too many, whatever it is.
Yeah, maybe, though, we should question the numbers if they're coming from the terrorist organization that's known for spreading propaganda. I have to say, though, spreading propaganda has, it must blow them away how easy it is over here. Like, they don't even have to pretend. This is what AOC wrote. She goes, how are news outlets dedicating wall-to-wall coverage to campus protests, but not the discovery of mass graves in Gaza of people with their hands tied and clothing stripped? Why do we not know more? Where are the journalists and resources being dedicated to that story? That story, which, by the way, is false.
Yeah, Ilhan Omar harped on that when she was greeting at the University of Minnesota. The story about mass graves.
This is from the Times of Israel. IDF rejects baseless claim it dug mass graves at Gaza hospital. Analysts also doubt charge. Not AOC. I'm sure Rashida Tlaib is not doubting it at all. Baseless claims are their favorite claims. And the report that she's retweeting is from Nicholas Kristof. And he's posting a report from a new UN statement, because the UN has been such a friend to the Jews at this point in time. They've really proven how anti-Semitic they are up until this point. But yeah, let's just take their word for it, too. The UN, Hamas. God forbid we take Israel's word on anything. We have to use a lot of skepticism when we're dealing with Israel. But before we go to your calls on this, when we play more sound, I wanted to give you a little bit of local news here. Karen Reed case. We've been following the Karen Reed case. We talked to Turtle Boy a lot. It has totally taken over the country. People are obsessed. People that friends of mine are just following this with bated breath. Everyone's waiting for this trial to start. It's very difficult, though, for juror selection. It's actually proving to be far more difficult to find jurors for this than it is for the Trump trial in New York City. And now the prosecutors in this case, I'm reading now from the Boston Herald, are challenging her defense's ability to bring their boss to the witness stand in the upcoming trial. So that would be the district attorney, the Norfolk district attorney, Michael Morrissey. So he's part of the 87 witnesses on the prosecution's list. And he's part of her side's possible witness list. Whoa. So Karen Reed's lawyers want to call up Morrissey. The prosecution saying you shouldn't be able to. And I kind of think that because he made that video slamming Turtle Boy, which I think he will come to regret if he hasn't already, that opens him up to this now. because that did not help people feel more confident that this wasn't a corrupt case or that there wasn't corruption involved. Once you make that weird YouTube video of you at a desk slamming a reporter, and you can hate Turtle Boy as much as you want, but he's been really one of the only journalists covering this from the beginning, at least. Once you make that video, I do think you're now inserting yourself as a possible witness or someone who should be questioned at the very least. 844-500-4242. Got a little tongue-tied there. Let's go to the callers here. Lisa, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Lisa?
Hi, Grace. How are you?
Good. What's up?
I got to do a Jen Psaki and circle back. I was just minding my own business in my house, and I heard you say Joe and Mika, and it was like a stabbing pain, like a toothache that went straight to my brain. I'm like, I have to call. I cannot take it. This makes me so mental. So, yes, Joe, we know you can't do algebra, arithmetic at all, or any kind of common sense. So he has some guy on and talks about how there's all these other people killed and all these other wars that we don't care about and the people don't protest against. But on a daily basis, he does everything he can to disrespect Netanyahu, to degrade him, to help with the people of Israel to overthrow him. In my opinion, he's so anti-Knesset. He's so anti-Orthodox, too, that I don't even want to hear from him on having somebody on there who he says those kinds of things to. It's not authentic. He is a moron, and that's being polite.
I don't disagree with you, Lisa. But I don't disagree with you, but let me play a little bit of this professor, because he's an NYU professor. He made a lot of great points. He's speaking out against this nuttiness, which is more than I can say for a lot of these professors. We saw one at Columbia who got his card deactivated, and then we have Scott Galloway. There haven't been a lot of them, and I do think that, you know, if somebody has the courage to stand up against the faculty and the insane student body that surrounds them, then we should give them a little bit of time on the show to make their point. And there's no question this guy is very intelligent. Let's have cut two. This is Professor Scott Galloway from NYU. He's a business professor there, and he's talking about these protests, these activists, these deranged nuts that have taken over the campus.
I'll give you some more numbers. 2,200 American servicemen killed at Pearl Harbor. We go on to kill 3.5 million Japanese, including 100,000 in one night. 2,800 Americans in 9/11. We go on to kill 400,000 people in Afghanistan and Iraq. We weren't accused of genocide. You had, if Mexico had elected a jihadist cartel to run their country, and then they incurred into Texas, and on a per capita basis killed 35,000 people, or the population of the University of Texas, and on the way back took the freshman class at SMU hostage and hid them under tunnels, what would we do? It'd be the Great Sonora Radioactive Parking Lot. But Jews are not allowed, and Israel is not allowed, to prosecute a war. And they are prosecuting a war more humanely than we have done. The ratio of combatants to civilians is, of civilian death to combatant mortality, is lower than it was in Mosul, lower than it was in Japan, lower than it was in Germany. So there's just a different standard for Jews in Israel when it comes to prosecuting a war. They're allowed to fight back to a truce. But unlike America or any other Western nation that has attacked this viciously, they're not allowed to win a war. It's a double standard.
Yeah, and the other part of this that he goes into that I really like, I listen to this podcast. It's a pop culture podcast with these two young women. I talk about it a lot. They're my age, the Ashray sisters, and they're Jewish. And one thing they said once that really stuck with me, they said, we were never talking about all this nuance until Jewish people were involved. Suddenly, when it comes to Jewish people or Israelis protecting themselves, or the Israeli government protecting its people, or fighting back, or retaliating, suddenly we have to have all these, like, oh, you have to understand. Joe Biden said, yeah, I condemn the anti-Israel protesters, but I also think people need to understand. You need to understand. Again, to go back to what this professor is saying, you send people into Texas and you start beheading American citizens, I don't think there's going to be calls for nuance and, like, read between the lines. And it's very complicated. What you need to know, I hate these stupid, like, newsletter emails I get. What you need to know about the conflict, and spoiler alert, everything you need to know, according to these media outlets, is how bad Israel is all the time. and how we should all be condemning Israel. That's what you need to know before your morning cup of joe. But this is the other part that Galloway gets into, which I appreciate. This is cut three.
And I do think there is a double standard. I walked by NYU last night. What I saw was peaceful protest. But I can tell you, if I went into the NYU square with a white hood on and said, lynch the blacks or burn the gays, my ID would be shut off by that night. And I would never work in academia again. There would be no need for the words context or nuance. I wouldn't be protected by terms like First Amendment or free speech. I would be out of the world of academia. It seems like we have a double standard when it comes to hate speech, as long as it's against Jews.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. By the way, these pro-Palestinian protests are now, they've caught on like wildfire. They're happening here in Massachusetts. We had MIT, Harvard. I think I heard today that BC is going to have some protests. So it's everywhere. And it's in vogue now. It's in vogue. And I think about Holocaust survivors. And by the way, there were Holocaust survivors who were slaughtered on October 7th. But I think about people who saw that happen, and Jewish people and grandparents, Jewish grandparents, who constantly told their kids and then their grandkids, you know, be vigilant. Don't let this happen again. It could always happen again. And that's one thing that if you talk to Jewish people who have grandparents who were alive during the Holocaust, they told their grandkids, a lot of them, they hammered it into their heads, into their kids' heads and into their grandkids' heads. Don't get spoiled and think that this couldn't happen again. Don't lose sight of the fact that it can. Never forget. There's a reason they would say that. Never forget. And I can't imagine how they feel watching this play out on college campuses, from the river to the sea. And then to see the media. It'd be one thing if this was happening on college campuses and we all the sane, so-called sane people all got together and said, this is insane. Like, you got to squash this. Bring in the National Guard. Enough. But to have the networks then try to do this both-sidism, or this why it isn't so bad, or make excuses for it, or try to sugarcoat it and say, you know, yeah, well, that is bad, but it wasn't everybody. It's, again, it's the peaceful protest of 2020. It's just kind of reformed to fit this new mold. And a really good example of that is actually Jonah Goldberg with this woman from the New York Times. Can I get cut five, please? This woman has to interrupt Jonah Goldberg because he's saying something that is so basic, something that you think we could all agree on. Even on CNN, you'd think we could agree on these terms. Nope, it goes too far for this woman from the New York Times. Cut five.
Look, I think the anti-Semitism stuff, particularly Passover, is a big issue. It's a legitimate issue to talk about. It's a serious issue. And I think there's a lot of anti-Semitic stuff going on out there. But when you're saying you're Hamas, when you're praising Hamas, when you're praising Hezbollah, when you're saying you're going to globalize the Intifada.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry.
Yeah?
I'm sorry, but there.
Everyone, I'm going to finish my point. It means you're pro-terrorist. If you are celebrating Hamas, you're pro-terrorist.
I'm not disputing that. What
okay,
I'm saying,
that's my point.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there are selective quotes that are being taken, often not from students themselves. In the encampments in Colombia, they have said this. There are Jewish students who are actually part of this. And they are being used to say,
let me finish my point.
No,
so,
that's true. But
hold on a second here. I don't think you get to do that when you have these kind of insurrections. I don't think you get to pick the protesters that you want to highlight and say, well, we don't claim the other ones. We don't claim the ones who were crazy. I don't think that's how it works. It didn't work that way on January 6th, I can assure you. By the way, if you're going to interrupt somebody when they say, hey, if you're saying we are Hamas, then you're pro-terrorist. If you're going to interrupt someone who's saying something as basic as that, at least interrupt with something. Don't just interrupt to go, you interrupted. So clearly what you have to say is important. So spit it out, sister. 844-500-4242. When you've shocked Jonah Goldberg, he couldn't even believe that. That's when you know you've really, really lost your mind. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls. 844-500-4242. And by the way, point taken, Lisa. I get what you're saying. I'm not suddenly a fan of Joe Scarborough, but I do like the guy he had on. And so whenever I hear a good sound, I'm going to play it. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
We're going to go right back to your calls. And just a reminder, we got Ben Weingarten joining us at 1:30. But right now, the poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit PerfectSmiles.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at GraceCurleyShow.com, is how many streaming services do you have? 1, 2 to 3, 3 plus, or I still have cable?
A lot of people are tweeting and texting, you know, is this how many you pay for? Yeah. I'm not interested in how many you glom off of. I respect it. I really respect it. But that's not what the poll is. So I pay for 2 streaming apps, YouTube TV and HBO. And I do find that HBO is worth it because you can watch Curb. You can watch The Sopranos. You can go back on some real classic TV shows and watch that. And YouTube TV is basically like having cable.
21% of the audience are in that range. They say 2 to 3. 19% say they only have 1, 18% say 3+, and 42% still have cable.
The craziest are the people who have cable and they pay for streaming apps. That to me is just, what a life of luxury you must be living. What kind of lottery did you hit? Lou, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Lou.
Yeah, how you doing, Grace? Let's not miss words here. I think this is totally built up and supported. All these so-called protests and anti-Jewish hatred and anti-Israel hatred has come from the Democratic Party, and it's spewing out. And you saw you played the New York Times person, and there's stooges in the media, and it's been going on for years. And it's sort of like, you're right. I heard you before talk about 2020 all over again. It used to be, the phrase used to be, first they came for the Jews. But in America, first they came for the police. Remember how they demonized police back in 2020? Mm-hmm. And it all started with Ferguson and then moved up and moved up and moved up and got worse and worse and worse and worse. The same thing is now happening with Israel and the Jewish people in the United States. It's getting worse and worse and worse. And the Democrats are the ones behind it. Biden is now trying to appeal to the Death America to America crowd in Dearborn. And it all came from Obama. Obama supported Iran, gave them money, tried to build them up. Biden's been doing the same thing. Obama's been supporting all this terrorism. And they're actually even supporting these protesters in the United States. I don't know how they sneak them in. He doesn't want to deport anybody. He doesn't want to get rid of them.
Let me go back to something you said about the cops, because I mentioned this earlier in the show, but Joe Biden's supposed to go to Syracuse to promote some sort of CHIPS Act, like $6 billion for a CHIPS Act and CHIPS and Science Act. And Syracuse has had 2 cops killed in the last week. And the head of the police union essentially said, are you serious? Like, can you not come right now? It's not a great time for us to be talking about chips. We prefer to grieve. We're grieving right now. We're in the middle of this. And this is the same guy who claims he's on the side of the cops. And one other thing, Lou, just because you brought it up, and I think it's important to note, something that's driving the liberals crazy right now, which I love this story, because we talk about Trump and NYC and these court cases. I guess there's an NYPD dump truck that has been blocking the side entrance of the court so that Trump can get in and out without being photographed by the reporters. So they're sticking it to the reporters in New York City. And this has led the left to feel like the cops are treating Trump favorably. They're giving him preferential treatment. I wonder why. I wonder why they like him more than the guy who's currently in office, who can't even go to a wake for a police officer who's shot in cold blood in New York and goes to a Stephen Colbert fundraiser. Let me try to figure that one out during the break. We'll be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Ben Weingarten has a stellar piece in the New York Post. Surprise to no one, he's always on fire, but especially given what's happening at Columbia, Ben had a lot to say. I want to read you one quote here from this piece, which I did link in my recommended reading today before we bring on Ben. He's talking about the complete and utter disgrace, which is the mayhem at the gates of Columbia University, and these protests, these brainwashed protesters, and how it's caught fire across all these different campuses across the United States. And Ben writes, absent a massive sea change, not just Jews, but all Americans will bear the brunt of the ceding of schools to those who would destroy the very civilization from which they sprang. Our elite academic institutions have for decades been petri dishes of left-wing radicalism. Ben, thank you for coming on the show. Why does it seem that this radicalism right now in this moment is coming to such a head?
Wasn't it fascinating that if you want to look at the accelerant to this, it was Hamas executed a Holocaust in a day in October of last year, and Israel daring to respond and defend itself against jihadists who not only want to execute a genocide in Israel, as the little say it in, but ultimately want to expand their theocratic Islamic rule over the world and view the U.S. as the great Satan, that Israel daring to respond, to defend its people, to defend its sovereignty, leads to the explosion of progressive and Islamic supremacist activism on college campuses, elite, non-elite, Ivy League schools, non-Ivy League schools across the country. And I also think it's worth noting that in an election year where you have an administration that, of course, has been completely overrun by these same sorts of buttoned-up, graduated progressive ideologues, a Democrat Party where the Progressive Caucus is near the majority of the Democrat conference in Congress, that you see the explosion in activity from ideologues that hold the same worldview as the Democrat leaders themselves, and the Democrat leaders, to the extent they disagree with them, and it's only a percentage that actually disagree with them fundamentally, are petrified and paralyzed to do anything, just like the university administrators are, because these are their people at the end of the day. These are their constituents. These are their voters. These are the future members of Democrat administrations, staffers for Democrat congressmen, HR representatives at Fortune 500 companies, and beyond. The college campus is the conveyor belt into the corridors of power. And the leaders, the so-called grown-ups in the room, have cowered and submitted to the cry-bully children who are really the propagandists and the PR arm for, and in some cases the useful idiots, and in other cases worse, for genocidal jihadists who want to see America destroyed.
Yeah, and Ben, I wanted to give you the opportunity as someone who, and I'm sure now this isn't something you like to publicize, but as someone who graduated from Columbia University, you're watching these protests, you're watching these really ignorant young people gather together and just kind of proudly profess their anti-Semitism. What do you make of it, and how do you respond as someone who's a graduate? I'm sure you're very disappointed that the school, that the institution has fallen so far.
Well, it's particularly outrageous and despicable because the reason that I pursued an education at Columbia was that it's one of the few schools that still has a core curriculum, which means that there is still a focus, a true liberal arts focus in reading the great books and debating the most important ideas that really our civilization is based on, from the Old Testament and New Testament through the Greeks and the Romans, and then the Founding Fathers, the Scottish Enlightenment, and beyond. You read all of that, or you're supposed to read all of that at Columbia, and you're supposed to debate these issues and understand the history, understand the heritage, because that is what ended up building this exceptional civilization, this exceptional country, and these one-time exceptional institutions. So I would say, you know, I'm proud of the Columbia degree, and the chances of getting in there were astronomically slim. However, the school has repudiated and rejected all of the principles on which it's based. Its core mission at the end of the day, in contrast to what its mission says now, and I posted what its mission is on Twitter today, and it talks about being a world-class, you know, global institution, and that requires having international faculty and students, which is exactly why the campus looks the way it does today, by the way. But it's a total rejection and repudiation of all the things that built schools like Columbia and many other schools across this country into the one-time prestigious and prominent exceptional institutions that they were. And to look at these kids on campus who want to tear down and destroy the very civilization that birthed schools like these, you know, on one level, how many kids who were deserving and who would actually help make this country great did not get in so that pro-Hamas genocidal jihadists who want to beat the hell out of Jewish kids on campus and then want to tear down this country ultimately got in over them? So
such a great point.
I feel bad for those who didn't get in, who deserved it. I feel horrible that this school has repudiated and rejected everything that it's based on. And most of all, for the American people broadly, I'm beyond scared and disturbed for what the future holds, because, again, these students today, to the extent they're not expelled, or for the non-citizens who are engaged in pro-Hamas activism and intimidation and harassment on campus, they aren't deported from the country. These are our future leaders, and we are all going to have to deal with the consequences of the policies that they are going to impose on us. And by the way, we're already there right now with this, with basically almost 12 years of Obama-Biden administration rule, which again just represents one generation prior of the very same radicals that we're seeing today.
Yeah, this is, in this piece in the New York Post, which everyone should read, you bring up the double standard of, you know, free speech is okay if you're calling to, you know, eradicate the Jews, but it's not okay if you're a conservative from like the Daily Caller or something like that. And I think that's a brilliant point. But the other part of this that a lot of people haven't been talking about and that you touch on later in this story is you say greed also plays a major role in how higher education operates. Foreign students pay full freight. Foreign powers fund schools to the tune of billions of dollars. I'd love for you to elaborate on that, Ben, because I haven't been seeing a lot of people really drilling down on that aspect of this.
Well, one fact that I found amazing is that if you were to guess who the largest foreign nation funder of U.S. higher education institutions would be, I think most people, if they thought about it for some time, would probably guess, well, it's got to be China, right? China has such massive influence on the U.S. China is such a large and relatively rich country.
Right.
So you assume that China, of course, would try to take advantage of our academic system and exploit it in all sorts of ways to its benefit using its heft. But actually, the largest foreign contributor to U.S. universities post 9/11 is Qatar. Who would have thought that it would be Qatar? Qatar has pumped billions of dollars into elite schools and non-elite schools, so-called, across this country for two decades. They're not alone. You obviously have the Saudis and many other regimes as well. Some of that funding goes to the Middle East studies departments, which are really hotbeds and have long been hotbeds of not just quote-unquote anti-Zionist, but also anti-American fervor. They also fund faculty. And beyond that, they fund the schools more broadly. So there's the corrosive and corrupting influence of dollars that come from adversaries, or at least Middle Eastern countries that take the same perspective as these protesters do, so-called, in many instances. And then you have foreign students who make up an increasing percentage of the classes at both public and private schools alike. And foreign students generally pay full freight. And there's a not insignificant percentage of them who come from these very same Middle Eastern countries. So Neetu Arnold of the National Association of Scholars has done really exceptional work on this. I'd urge people to check out her work because she's broken down what percentage of foreign student funding of schools we're talking about. So you have this poisonous mix of both the left-wing ideology of the schools and the administrators that already exist on the one hand, and the faculty and most of the students. And then on the other hand, you have the greed aspect of it, which is foreign funding from foreign governments and associated entities, and then foreign students who, again, pay full freight. And you put that together, and that is a really toxic brew. And that's why our institutions today look like they're occupied by not only the left-wing radicals, but also Islamic supremacists from abroad. And it's in large part because they are. That is literally who is there today.
Yeah, Ben, one part of this that I think is really important, because on my show, we talk about these schools all the time. We talk about higher education. We talk about, you know, how people are leaning now towards sending their kids to trade schools, or at least encouraging them to look at different career paths, because they have lost this idea that there's a lot to be gained from going to these schools. But something that you write here, and I think this is an important part of the story as well, is that this doesn't start at the universities. You know, this starts a lot earlier on, because sometimes I'll have people call up and they'll talk about the professors or the students and, you know, what the professors are teaching these kids. And I say, these kids are coming in ready to go as far as this radical agenda. They're not learning it once they get to college. They're not learning it, you know, after high school. A lot of this stuff is starting as young, you say K through 12.
Absolutely. All you have to do is look at, go to any blue city, blue state, at blue town, and walk into a local bookstore and see what the kids' books look like in that bookstore. And that's a great proxy. And I'll tell you, they're indoctrination to the nth degree. Literally, baby books. There's a book called A is for Activists, for example.
Yep.
Real book out there. And of course, these are in part, you know, for the parents. They get a big kick out of their kids being indoctrinated into left-wing radicalism. But it starts from the beginning. They believe that you have to indoctrinate from day one, essentially. If you look at the population of teachers themselves, of course, and the teachers' colleges, those colleges themselves are hotbeds of activism. So there is a, there's an effort to indoctrinate kids in this from K through 12, if not even before K through 12, based upon who the population is of people that go into teaching, the institutions they come from, the teachers' unions themselves, which are, of course, hyper-progressive, and that's who this, the teachers have to show fealty towards to advance. And then the political class, of course, which wants an indoctrinated public, a public that will do their bidding, allow them to get reelected, and allow them to usurp ever greater power. So it's a systemic problem, and you're almost dealing with the symptoms at the end of the day rather than the root causes when it comes to the colleges, but for the fact that obviously so-called elite colleges provide a credential that's seen as hugely important in society, and their pipelines into the most influential aspects of sectors of American society. So they are maybe disproportionately powerful and important, but obviously this starts with, from the left's perspective, pitting kids against their parents, pitting them kids against their parents in part through schools that indoctrinate them into a worldview that might be antithetical to what they learn in their, from their parents or in their house of worship, and then continuing that indoctrination all the way through, so that there's almost never even a chance for them to have a counter perspective, a counter narrative, to see the light of a dissenting political worldview. And we see the consequences of that in Washington, D.C. every single day.
Yeah, and you write about this, and Scott Galloway, the professor from NYU, also mentioned it, that they see everything through the lens of oppressed and oppressor, and we're seeing that now with a lot of these protests, demonstrations, riots, whatever you want to call it. Ben, I do have to ask you one more thing here before I let you go. I want to play a little bit of sound. This is Representative, someone you're very familiar with, someone Ben actually wrote a whole book about, Representative Ilhan Omar. She's at the she's at Minnesota University, and she's at their encampment, their pro-Hamas encampment. And here's what she had to say, cut nine.
I have the proud honor of representing this incredible university in Congress. And I have to tell you, I am incredibly moved by your courage and bravery as a student body in putting your bodies on the line to stand in solidarity to end the genocide that is taking place in Gaza at this moment.
Now, Ben, as someone who's very familiar with Ilhan Omar's backstory and her time in Congress thus far, what do you make of her being, I think, one of the first people in Congress to join in on one of these protests?
Well, yeah, and it's also worth noting that her daughter was arrested in New York and kicked out of, I believe, Barnard, maybe
yes,
Columbia, as well. So like daughter, like mother here. Of course, you know, she calls it a genocide. And basically, this is a mouthpiece for her. She says she's a representative for her district. But at the end of the day, this is a mouthpiece for Hamas, Islamic supremacists around the world. She's consorted with Islamic supremacists, foreign and domestic. She advocates for their policies in Congress. She apes their rhetoric. And this is a person who has no business being in Washington, D.C. And this is a person who, frankly, should have never been permitted to come into this country with these worldviews in the first place, precisely because our immigration system is supposed to filter out those who hold radical anti-American worldviews and would seek to undermine that country. It's an utter disgrace this person is in Congress. It was a national security threat when she sat on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, given the links, ties, and coordination that I lay out in my book, American Ingrate, as you mentioned kindly about her. given her ties to, if you use the Russian collusion standard and you apply that to Ilhan Omar and Islamic supremacists, foreign and domestic, she was a national security threat there to the nth degree and never needed security clearance because she's a member of Congress. Think about how much damage was done there. This person has no place in Congress, but most disturbing, again, of all, I just want to emphasize this point. While she is overt and out there in her anti-American radicalism and her pro-Islamic supremacist orientation, she is joined by dozens and dozens of progressive caucus members in Congress, and then on top of all of those people working in the administrative state for Joe Biden, who take the very same worldview and who worked for Barack Obama before him. So the most disturbing thing of all is that she is not the far left outlier that she is framed as. She actually just represents the unvarnished, open, overt, out there version of the very people who are actually making U.S. policy and conducting U.S. policy today. And think about how dangerous that is for a future and a present.
Absolutely. Ben Weingarten, we got to end it here. Follow Ben on Twitter at BH Weingarten. Get his book on Amazon. Yeah, subscribe to his Substack at weingarten.substack.com. We'll talk to you again soon, my friend. I got to end it here. We'll be right back with more. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. We've got a great last hour plan. I'm actually going to let Jared tell us a little bit about what's going on in Ukraine. There's a CBS piece that gives us an update on what's going on there. And Jared, you came in my office today. Whenever you come in my office and you're revved up about something, I think we got to let Jesus take the wheel here and let Jared take the wheel.
Yeah, I think we may have found out where all that missing $40 million went.
You think so?
That's all the only tease I'm going to give. If anybody saw the Today Show this morning, one, God bless you. Two, you may have a little bit of a lead-in on this, but yeah, I think we found the missing money.
It was a weird piece for them to do, like, because I don't think that's what they were trying to get at.
Oh, no, not at all.
It was accidental. What is how we call it, like a drive-by journalism or accidental journalism or something?
Oh,
something like that. They did. That definitely was not the point. Of
random act of journalism.
Yes, that's exactly what it was, from the fake but accurate CBS. By the way, the New York Times is outlining the police's favorable treatment of Trump because an NYPD dump truck has parked in front of the court to block reporters. They're mad that Trump's getting favorable treatment from the police. We'll be right back.